Hi, I'm Lena.
And I'm Aman.
And this is Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
Hooray.
Hooray. So this week,
we're talking all the spoilers. Everyone, if you have not seen Spider-Man No Way Home, just turn off everything and stop listening. So yeah.
Yes. Anyway, unless you don't care about seeing it, in which case enjoy our conversation about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
What?
I don't know.
Okay. Wow. Anyway, also, what was that ding noise in the background?
Somebody rang the doorbell.
Oh my God. Okay. Anyway.
I'm ignoring them.
Okay. First off, let's just talk about first impressions. Aman, what did you think of the newest Spider-Man movie?
I loved it. I was deeply concerned because after watching the trailers, I was like, oh no, they're going to have too many villains and it's going to be Spider-Man 3 all over again.
Yes.
And
with Tobey Maguire, Spider-Man 3. Yeah.
Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man 3 and Sam Raimi's. Yes. Spider-Man 3, but turns out it was less that, and it was more Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes, it was.
Which they totally ripped off of the whole everything.
Yeah, I just want to know, like, I wonder, did they get the same writers or something? The storyline is very similar to the beautifully animated, also equally amazing film that came out a few years ago called Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is about Miles Morales. And the whole thing is, again, about the multiverse and bringing in multiple Spider-Men from different universes. So
I actually feel like the storyline was different, but the concept was the same.
The storyline was different, but they both very heavily leaned into the multiverse, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's like a huge, huge, huge part of the plot for both of them. So like in that sense, I think I said this to you before, but I think this Spider-Man movie, I loved it too, by the way. It was amazing. Awesome. So much fun and hype. I was like, woo, like, you know, like at different points in the movie. And the last time I did that was during Avengers Endgame. So very excited and hyped for it. But I think this movie would have been more mind-blowing if like Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse didn't exist. And then I would have been like, oh my God, they brought back Tobey Maguire Spider-Man and Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. Oh my God, Doc Ock is there. Oh my God, the Green Goblin. You know, like I would have just lost my shit way more. But also, I just, even in the trailer, I was like, oh, they're going to bring back everyone. Interesting. And so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't even know how they could have made a trailer without kind of.
Giving something away,
you know, that like this is what's about to happen, because they need people to get hyped to even see it.
Yeah.
But I almost wish I hadn't seen any of the trailers, because then it would have been more fun. Would have been more.
I know. I think this whole culture that exists in a certain niche on the internet of trying to figure out what a movie is about and what the plot is going to be before the movie drops, I think is really unhealthy. And I think it like, why are you getting into that?
Yeah.
Like, why are you doing that? Isn't that ruining the experience for yourself?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't get it.
I hate it.
I just don't get it.
I hate when trailers for comedies put all the funny parts in the trailer and then there's nothing else in the movie.
Right.
And I hate when trailers clearly give way too much away. Like, they're basically recaps. They're not trailers at that point.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, it's a fine art, I think, to make a good trailer.
I agree. For
a movie. So
a good trailer and an effective trailer. Cause I feel like those are two different things. Effective, good in terms of enjoyable to watch and effective in terms of getting you excited about a movie without giving away too much of anything.
Well, by my definition, good,
that's the definition,
always
of a
means
good trailer.
Effective. Yes, I'm on.
Okay. Well,
please, do you even know me? All right.
No, I've only known you your entire life. I don't know you at all.
My entire life, right? Yeah, not your entire life. So there.
Not my entire life.
Okay, so what do we want to get into first about Spider-Man No Way Home?
I think the first thing we should just get into is the good use of villains. I feel like they teased an almost Sinister Six thing, which was really cool, you know, having Lizard and Doc Ock and Green Goblin and Electro. Who else was there? Sandman. That's five. I feel like I'm missing a villain.
Wait, Doc Ock, Green Goblin, Sandman, Electro.
Yeah, Lizard. Was there another one? I feel like at various points in the comics, the Sinister Six was actually just five people, but whatever.
Whatever.
The point being, they had the makings of a pretty classic supervillain team up, but without actually doing it. You know, it was a nice little shout out, I think. Mm-hmm. And really, like, they just kind of proved, this movie, I think, kind of proved that nobody other than Willem Dafoe could do Green Goblin, and yes, nobody other than Alfred Molina could do Doc Ock.
Yep.
Their performances, like, man, I was a little bit worried when I saw Alfred Molina in the trailer that he was just going to be calling it in.
Yeah.
And same thing with Willem Dafoe, but they did not. Brought their A game. And yeah. I mean, it kind of reminded me why the original Spider-Man movies were so good. It's because they had top level acting in them. They had
such good villains. Yeah.
Yeah. But like acted really well. And I think a villain's performance can make or break a movie, you know? Yeah,
agreed.
It's the same thing with Spider-Man Homecoming, you know, with Michael Keaton really just bringing it as the Vulture. You know, it was so good. He took a third-rate villain and made him amazing.
Yeah. I was also very worried that they were going to do this annoying thing where they bring back all these villains and then, you know, Doctor Strange locks them up in his dungeon. And
that's the end of it.
And yeah. And I thought that was going to be, I was about to be so pissed if that's what would have happened. If like all we see of Alfred Molina's performance was on that bridge and that was it.
That would have been terrible.
And then I was really worried that the rest of the movie was just going to be Peter trying to like find all the others and bring them in this dungeon. And that was going to be it. And
then this chase whole, me down hero of the monster of the week adventure compressed into a movie.
And this whole, the curveball that was thrown was Aunt May. And
I know,
and her basically insisting like, no, Peter, you get like, I didn't raise you like this, you know, like you can't just treat people like this. These people need help. And
yeah,
that was so brilliant, because another thing I was worried about was I was like, okay, so you've brought all these old villains from the multiverse into this universe. And you're just, Disney's just playing on our nostalgia here, you know, and nostalgia is very powerful. And I thought we were just going to see Disney the same. Is
very good at that.
Yeah, they are. And and I was just worried we were going to see the same exact kind of tropes from these same exact villains. And it was just going to be like the same hashed out. Okay. And then he brings in Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield and they fight him off. Hurrah, you know, but no, the story was so much better than that. And I have to say, I feel like I went on a journey with that because in the beginning when Aunt May was like, you have to help them, I wanted to be like, bitch, let them go. This is not your fight. Like, this is not like Peter was saying, right? Like, this is not my problem. I can't deal with this. And then her death and her.
Oh, my God. That I was I was watching that and I was like, no. No, you can't just kill Aunt. No.
So just that.
No. And then that happened.
I know. And so the thing is with this, the Tom Holland Spider-Man, with every other Spider-Man movie, it's always been the same origin story where it's like Uncle Ben dies with great power, comes great responsibility, blah, blah, blah. Spider-Man is born. Okay. And they didn't do that with the Spider-Man. And I always thought that was really interesting, but I was like, oh, it's a really iconic line. Like, it's kind of a big risk for them to just drop that entirely. And I just wasn't expecting it. You know, I definitely wasn't expecting it to come out of Aunt May. If anything, I thought maybe they would do some sort of flashback at some point in the trilogy or something.
To Uncle Ben dying.
Right. To something like that. But the fact that they gave that beautiful, iconic line to Aunt May. And I'm very impressed with Marissa Tomei too. And her performance of that. And just, I was so moved, honestly, in that.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's amazing. Like, I love that they wove that into her character and who she is.
And actually, on top of that, the interesting thing that they did, if you look at all three of the MCU Spider-Man movies, all right, Homecoming, Far From Home, and No Way Home, it's interesting because they built these movies and ignored the quote unquote Spider-Man origin story, all right, because it had been rehashed so many times already.
Yep.
But in fact, with this last movie, they made it clear that these three movies are the origin story.
Yeah.
You know, which I thought was a really good twist. They made us assume that this is the same Spider-Man with the same origin story that we all know and love. All right. With Uncle Ben dying and Spider-Man's armed because he was being whatever with his superpowers. But in fact, lo and behold, at the end of this third movie, we find out it's a brand new origin story, actually, that we are in. And the subsequent Spider-Man movies with Tom Holland, I think they've confirmed three more.
They have?
I think so. Yeah.
Wait, because the last thing I saw was Tom Holland being like, I'm pretty satisfied with, like, I feel like I've done everything I wanted to do with Spider-Man. And then I saw like Kevin Feige being like, we're not done yet. Sit down, you know?
I think maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But there's going to be more. All right.
Is that known? We will include this in the show notes, everyone. We'll verify this. But yeah.
But basically, any subsequent Spider-Man movies that happen are going to be now with a fully formed hero.
Yeah.
The fully formed Spider-Man that we know and love, who moves through the world with this sense of, with great power comes great responsibility. And this idea that before he used to say, I just want to help the little guy.
Yeah.
But he was so young, I think that he didn't really understand what that meant until the end of this third movie. You know, what does it really mean to just help?
Yeah.
To help people who really aren't getting help, you know? And I feel like they did it in such a smart way that actually wove in the first two movies and turned it into a proper journey for this Spider-Man.
Yeah. And also as part of his growth at the very end, you know, once that whole spell is cast and now everyone has essentially forgotten who he is.
Yeah.
I think he's also learned what it means to truly be selfless and to be sacrificing when he sees MJ again in the coffee shop and he's about to like introduce himself and like re-enter her life. But then, you know, he overhears that she and Ned got into MIT and he was like, I can't get in their way again. You know, like I have to let them pursue their dreams and goals and whatever. Right. And like, he makes this decision, even though MJ and Ned would be pissed at him.
Yes.
And they want him back in their lives and on a subconscious level. But yeah, I just thought that was so sad.
So
The
next thing that I want to bring up is this line by Electro when Electro is finally done.
Yeah.
And he's talking to his Spider-Man, the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man. Yeah. And he was like, I thought you'd be black. I mean, that was such a clear shout out to the Miles Morales Spider-Man.
Which
makes me wonder.
They're definitely going to bring him in. They have
now, to. Now, here's the question. Are they going to bring him in as part of this universe?
Yeah,
or are they going to bring him universe. In from a separate universe? If they follow this universe, if they insert him in this universe and they follow the same trajectory as Miles's origin story in the comics, then this Spider-Man is going to die.
You mean the Tom Holland Spider-Man is going to die?
Yes.
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 Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And then you'll have Miles pick it up.
Yeah.
Pick up the mantle. And they already did have a shout out. And I think it was in Homecoming where Donald Glover
played,
what's his name?
He plays his uncle.
He plays his uncle, Aaron.
Aaron? Yeah. I was like, wait, no, not Troy. I'm thinking of his character.
His character Community.
My bad. Not Troy. Aaron. Uncle Aaron. Yeah.
Troy and Abed in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, they already kind of introduced him. So
yeah,
that's my prediction.
It would be fairly
at the end of the next arc of Spider-Man movies, Tom Holland's Spider-Man is going to die.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think so. Wow. Lots to think about.
Next set of connected tissue that I wanted to talk about is the connective tissue with Hawkeye. So Hawkeye introduced Kingpin the same week that Spider-Man No Way Home came to theaters. And they introduced in that movie Matt Murdock.
Matt Murdock. Dude, that was the best, most surprising reveal. Like, my whole theater gasped. Like, they were like,
yeah.
Like, you know, Daredevil, you know, it was so funny. I was like, oh my God, that was so well done. I was not expecting that. I was not.
Yeah,
I didn't see that. I don't know how I managed to avoid that spoiler because I did not see this opening weekend.
I know.
And yeah. So,
and I mean, the thing is that like Charlie Cox has been for the whole time, like, yeah, I'm not, nobody's asked me to come back as Daredevil.
Yeah.
And it's like, and now it's like, you lying bastard.
Yeah.
But also, thank you so much for lying to me.
Right.
I appreciate you lying through your teeth.
Right. Dude, that scene where he like catches the brick or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And when Tom Holland is like, how did you do that? What did he say again when he asked, how did you do that?
Oh, it was a good line. It was a decent line.
Crap. What did he say? Why can't I remember now?
Something about being a fancy lawyer or something.
Yeah, I forget.
Is that something we can look up right now?
Probably. It'll take too long.
Yeah, that's true.
But man, that was so good. That was very interesting.
Yeah, but now that all three of these characters are in the same universe, Spider-Man, Kingpin, and Daredevil, I expect some classic team-ups with Daredevil and Spider-Man taking on Kingpin. Or just Kingpin taking on either Daredevil or Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And with the whole reset and reboot that the soft reboot that Marvel has pulled off with the end of this movie, with Spider-Man really becoming a down-to-earth hero again. I mean, without getting into the intricacies, like you and I were discussing before, of like, wait, so if the whole world's forgotten Peter Parker, but not Spider-Man, why would the Avengers not be around to help Spider-Man? But
yeah,
I mean, still at the end of the movie, they made it pretty clear that, you know, with the way Doctor Strange was talking about it and stuff, that the Avengers wouldn't remember Spider-Man's involvement in the whole Infinity War saga. You know, that was kind of what Doctor Strange was implying. But what that does, so regardless of getting into the details of like, is that actually what would happen? Without really getting into that, effectively what they did is pull Spider-Man out of this really big world and made him, you know, the New York friendly neighborhood Spider-Man again.
Like, it's like you were saying actually during our last episode about Hawkeye, that it seems to be this direction that Disney's going in where they're bringing, you know, they took everything out into space and aliens and shit. And
bigger
now they're
bigger and badder.
Right. And now they're going back and going into the details and making things on the street level again. And that's the sense I got to at the end of the Spider-Man movie.
Yeah. Which means that it's even more likely that Spider-Man is going to come into direct confrontation with Kingpin.
Yeah. But also it's like,
assuming Kingpin's not dead.
Right. Ugh, I swear if he is. Okay. But I think also it's interesting because I think some of our most difficult struggles and fights are on a more granular level, you know, a more street, yeah. like, you know, in general, as humans, I'm saying too, this is the real world aspect I'm bringing into all this. So I think there's like, I'll be really interested to see that in general for more characters, wherever, to seeing more right. of this like street level struggles that they're having. Cause it was getting to be a lot with the aliens and time travel and all that. And I'm like, okay, like, we get it. Okay.
How
it's
much
a lot.
Bigger can you get?
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So,
which I mean, they somehow pull that off with Kang, which at some point in the future, I will talk about how Kang is an even bigger threat than
Thanos.
Even Thanos was, in a way, a significantly more powerful villain, even than Thanos.
Yeah.
But that may or may not be for another episode. But speaking of which, that reminds me, the whole Loki thing, you know, I didn't realize how much the Loki show would actually impact the other stories in the MCU. Like the story, Loki's story, you and I both hated that show. We thought it was stupid. But at the end of the day, it opened up the multiverse. It created the multiverse, which is what made Spider-Man No Way Home possible, which is what's going to make Doctor Strange 2 possible and all that stuff.
Okay, I have a question.
Yeah.
See, this is, I swear, maybe I'm just too stupid for Loki. That's why I didn't understand it. But like, I just, didn't the multiverse already exist? Like, I don't under, like, I swear, I need to watch some other kind of recap about Loki because I don't know what the fuck they were trying to do with that show. Like, I just, I hated everything about it so much. And I was somehow falling asleep. So.
So basically,
didn't the multiverse, doesn't it like exist in general?
So if it didn't, that's what Loki was making clear. It didn't exist. All right. But with the events of Loki, it then started to exist. Okay. However, now this is one of the weird things. Uh-huh. When Infinity War and Endgame were happening, there was no multiverse, all right? During which, so like Doctor Strange couldn't have like opened up the doors to the multiverse and called in more Captain Marvels to take on Thanos, you know? That couldn't happen, all right? However, once Loki happened, because Kang existed outside of time itself, he was operating the TVA outside of time. Mm-hmm. Once the multiverse came to exist, it had always existed.
Oh, God. I hate everything so much right now.
So that means that even though the events of Infinity War and Endgame and everything leading up to that point operated as though there was no multiverse, once the multiverse came into existence, all right, their pasts couldn't change. However, the multiverse came into existence in a way where it had always existed.
This is so stupid.
Does that make sense?
I get what you're saying, but I don't like it. don't like it.
Well, just be thankful that our one uncle, Tarek Chacha, who said to me one time, 10-dimensional math is a freeing experience. All right. So like, just be glad I'm not going into like that level of discussion here.
Great. Awesome.
Just to be clear, when he said that to me, I stopped talking to him. I was like, this conversation needs to end right now.
Before my head explodes.
Yeah. I can't with you. I just can't with you.
Shout out to Tarek Chacha. We love you.
We love you so much.
So then, with everything that happened in Loki, wouldn't Doctor Strange and his fellow wizards and mages and whatever, be like, we sense a shift in the air, you know, like something's off.
But here's the thing. If you think of the moment that the multiverse came into existence as existing at a point in time, mm-hmm. right? Like, oh, like you're wait, saying.
I get what you're saying. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Then that is actually the incorrect premise. Because it's happening outside of time, there wouldn't have been a single moment where anybody in our particular time stream and universe would have sensed anything going wrong. Because it would have always been the case. The multiverse always existed.
I just think it's stupid that the multiverse needed an on-off switch. Like, if it's always, like...
And you know, that is what makes Kang as a villain so powerful, is because he turned the multiverse off and his death turned it back on.
Is he dead, dead?
No, see, but that, because that was the whole point, is oh, that right. with the multiverse existing, there is now an infinite number of Kangs.
This is too much.
And one of those versions.
He was saying, right? He was like, oh, they're so much worse than me. He's like, I'm the nice
one. I'm the good one. He was saying, I'm the good guy. There's going to be an evil version of me. If you think what I'm doing is evil, you have no idea what's fucking coming.
Okay. I need to breathe. Oh, God. This is... I knew we had to talk about the multiverse, obviously, in this episode, but I didn't think my brain would actually break.
I mean, it's the same thing with the whole time traveling thing and why they have to shrink to time travel.
Right.
Oh, you don't know where I'm going with this?
No,
well, like, then you have to get into, like, you have to go into the quantum particles.
Yes, I get that. Yeah.
Because quantum particles don't move through time in the same way, and they are connected to each other in an infinite number of paths.
Okay, so how much?
Basically, the old Steve Rogers that showed up at the end of Endgame may have actually gone through a different timeline from when he went back in time, may have been part of a different time stream that then reconnected to that specific point in time for him to meet his people without ever actually interacting with them.
Right, right. Okay, now my question is...
You're just ignoring everything I said.
Whatever. Okay. My question is, I'm stepping out of the MCU and into the real world now.
Okay. Okay.
How much of the multiverse is actually real? Or we obviously don't know. No, but like, is it like, we don't know, right? No one's obviously been able to prove it. Like,
oh yeah. 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 I mean,
real
right
life,
now it's
I'm talking about real life on Earth, our Earth.
Right now, the idea of a multiverse only exists as mathematical theorems.
Right.
So from what I know, at least, and I would have done a little more research if I'd known about this, but the mathematically speaking, multiple universes should exist.
Right.
However, there is nothing that says that every choice that you make spawns a new universe.
Right.
So there's nothing like that to be proven for any kind of math to show.
Yeah.
But the idea that multiple universes and multiple realities exist is something that, at least according to mathematical theories, like the math adds up. The math shows that multiple mm-hmm. universes can and probably do exist. Stephen Hawking had a whole thing about how intelligent life could really only exist in this universe because mm-hmm. other universes probably have different level of physics and different number of dimensions. Mm-hmm. However, three dimensions is what is required for an adequate level of complexity to exist,
yeah. mm-hmm.
for complexity in molecules to exist, for intelligent life or any life to come about.
Well, how does he know other universes or whatever aren't operating in four dimensions or five dimensions?
Oh, it was just a theory of how whether life could develop under different laws of physics, because mm-hmm. that's the whole thing about the multiple universe theory, is that these are universes that would have completely different laws of physics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah.
Meaning that the actual forces that hold things together, you know,
yeah. mm-hmm.
would not work in the same way and may not even hold particles together.
Yeah. I get it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's so much that we still do not know that it's very, you know, who knows in 500 years, 1,000 years, 10,000 years, whatever, like,
yeah,
we may be able to access the multiverse or something crazy like that. And
maybe,
or who knows? And maybe we'll be interacting with aliens at that point too. Who knows? But yeah, all this stuff that like, that I clearly barely have a grasp on in physics and space and time and all that. I think about, and this, I'm going to maybe get a little philosophical here, but I also think about religion a lot too, and how, so in Islam, for example, you know, according to the Quran, it's not just like humans and angels and God or whatever that are in existence. There's also jinn who, according to the Quran, they live among us too, but like on a different plane almost.
Plane of existence.
Yes. Yeah, like a different plane of existence. And, you know, some people just maybe interpret them as ghosts or spirits or whatever. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, I just think that I'm very open to anything and everything existing because there's still so little that we know.
I mean, yeah, speaking from a religious perspective and a scientific perspective, mm-hmm. I definitely think that there is more intelligence life out there in the universe. From a scientific perspective, I would say the universe is so big, it is statistically almost impossible that we would be the only intelligent life.
Yeah.
And from a religious perspective, I feel like if you believe in an infinite God,
mm-hmm.
you have to believe in an infinite creation.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. why would God limit himself to only making humans?
Right.
And if you truly think about the concept of infinity, all right, why would God limit himself, royal him, could be mm-hmm. herself, I don't know. Why would God limit himself to only three dimensions that move along a fourth dimension to his creation?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Which gets into that plane of existence. I mean, when you really think about the concept of infinity, you know, mm-hmm. it's not just a straight line. It's also an expansive, like not a one dimensional line. It's also moving in different in three dimensions. Why would like the concept of infinity can be quite broad, and you just have to be a little bit creative in mm-hmm. terms of processing how infinite really can be, infinitely large, infinitely small. I mean, it makes me think about this one thing I heard Neil deGrasse Tyson say one time, which was that if ants had scientists, they probably still wouldn't have discovered gravity, because the effect of gravity mm-hmm. is stronger on larger objects than it is on smaller objects.
Yeah.
So for ants, when they fall, they may move towards something, but they don't mm-hmm. feel the effects of gravity nearly as strongly as we do, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So which makes me think, are there forces going big that we haven't detected yet?
Yeah.
You know, that we can't sense yet or even grasp yet.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how I think of infinite, like the small, the weak and strong electromagnetic forces and nuclear forces are very, very strong when you look at it on a small scale. Like gravity, when you look at an atom, you know,
mm-hmm.
gravity has almost no role in holding that atom together.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Even though if you look at it to scale, the distance between the nucleus of an atom
mm-hmm.
and like its electrons is bigger than, you know, like if the nucleus of an atom was the same size as, let's say, the sun.
Yeah.
All right. The first layer of electrons would be further out than Pluto is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yet gravity still has no role in this interaction whatsoever. But gravity has a very powerful role when you get into the larger scale.
Yeah.
Which mm-hmm. makes me wonder, is there possibly a force even larger than that.
Yeah.
Now, which brings me back down to the whole thing. Let's say we were ants, you know, just the concept of trying to understand like, whoa, gravity, how is this even like a thing? You know, like that is what I mean by infinite. Like how much bigger?
Yeah.
How much smaller and shifting? And, you know, like, I mean, it goes on and on forever.
Yeah.
So that's how I come to terms with science and religion and the complete and utter minusculeness of our understanding of the nature of this wondrous world and universe.
Right. All thanks to Spider-Man for having this conversation.
Right. That's what we were talking about.
This is why we do what we do, folks. Okay. Because stories are what get us talking about these larger than life concepts and everything, and how we get a sense of our own world and universe. So there.
Can I bring up one other small subject before we wrap this up?
Yes, you can.
It's more in the realm of the political.
Okay.
Adding the Captain America shield to the Statue of Liberty, replacing the Statue of Liberty's torch with Captain America's shield.
But then by the end, it was gone. The shield was gone.
Well, because they broke it. They broke it,
but then the torch was scaffolding. And then,
I mean, because they were putting the shield in front of the torch.
Yeah, but still.
But I think what I wanted to get at. It seems
symbolic that the shield had fallen down to me.
I'm just saying. Possibly. If it was symbolic at all, I feel like it was more of a commentary on the real world, which is.
Yes, exactly. Which is, we have lost our honor as Americans because everyone's lost their minds.
I was just going to say that I was actually going to go on a different route, which is that in the MCU, Captain America is a beloved enough Steve Rogers, Captain America, not Sam Wilson, Captain America, but Steve Rogers, Captain America is a beloved enough person that we actually came together and changed the Statue of Liberty to hang his shield up on her arm.
Right.
Is there anyone or anything in today's world, in the real world today, who could be such a unifying figure in this country?
Before the pandemic, I would have been like, yeah, maybe. Now, hell no, definitely not. I don't think anything will unify.
I mean, if you can't get behind the idea of, viruses kill people, like, I don't really know what could bring people together.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
remember when everyone thought this pandemic was going to be the great equalizer, the great unifier, all of it.
Yeah. And it was equalizer. Yes. Unifier. No.
Yeah. No, but people thought, oh my God, you know, like, because this virus,
maybe now we can rally around something.
Anyone. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from, how much money you have. Although it did all matter, you know, who you are, where you come from, how much money you have, that did actually have an impact on this virus.
It did.
Yeah.
If you and had also money, denial.
Could, yeah, exactly. Like, I mean,
which it was not just a river in Egypt.
No. You were so lame with your dad jokes. Okay.
I take pride in my dad jokes. Thank you very much.
Anyway. Yeah. I don't think so. I thought that was interesting too, that they, I was like, they put a whole freaking shield there. And then the Spider-Man.
I feel like recently what comes to mind is the passing of Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who I think one news article said his infectious laughter united the world and healed people, and helped heal society. I'm pretty sure there's somebody out there who's like, Desmond Tutu was a dick.
Okay. Wow,
like,
am I.
Like, jeez. That's the world that I feel like we live in, where it's like, even somebody like him probably is still getting probably bashed by somebody out there.
That sadly is the world we live in. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm very jaded by the world right now.
Yeah, same here. Which is why I love doing this podcast with you, Lena, because it gives me an opportunity to think about not this world. Yeah. But then at the same time, I have to, because our whole tagline is making the geek world relevant.
Yeah. Damn it. We should have just been like, we're grounded geeks where we never, ever talk about the shitty real world. man. Too bad. Oh, well. Should we also talk about the post-credit scenes? Now I can't remember them all. What was the first one?
Venom.
Venom. Yes. That was interesting.
I thought that was great.
They're totally setting up for a different
Spider-Man Venom.
There's going to be a new Venom, not like the Tom Hardy Venom.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's what they were doing. That's what they were doing.
That's a good point.
Because, of course, setting a little piece of Venom got left behind in this, you know, MCU.
Oh, right.
And then Tom Hardy got zipped back to his universe.
That's true.
So that's going to happen with that. And then Doctor Strange... The next,
they just
multiverse of madness. Yeah, that was just the trailer, basically.
That was just the trailer.
Yeah,
which I can see why they did that. Yeah, but
it looks good. Looks interesting.
It looks good. It means that we're gonna have another episode of Grounded Geeks where we talk about quantum physics
and Wanda. Wanda's coming back.
And quantum physics.
Wanda and quantum physics. Yeah, that should just be the name of our that episode.
Doctor Strange 2, Wanda and quantum physics.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. I think that was it for me. I did want to give a shout out to this one scene that cracked me up when Tom Holland was telling Toby and Andrew about how he was in the Avengers. And Tobey Maguire's like, that's awesome. What is that? Is that a band or something? Were you in a band? Like, they're so adorable and cute and supportive and wholesome. It wasn't even like sarcastic. They were just like, that's really cool, man. Like, what is that? You know, like when you talk to like a little 8-year-old and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about, but that's so great.
I felt the same way about Andrew Garfield. Like, parts of this movie were also so meta, and not like the company where Andrew Garfield was just like, oh my god, I'm the lame one.
Yeah.
I'm the lame Spider-Man. And just like another wholesome moment. No, you're not. You are. Come on, say it. You are not lame.
Yeah.
You are strong.
You're amazing. You're amazing.
You're amazing. Extra shout out because those movies were called The Amazing Spider-Man.
Exactly. It was great. Yeah. It was really great.
Which, does that mean that this is in the Ultimate Universe? Like, the Tom Holland Spider-Man is Ultimate Spider-Man?
Like, that's Miles Morales, right?
Well, no, because the whole Ultimates Universe thing in comics was like, it was just like way darker, way more serious, and it was its own universe, and there were like actual fucking consequences. He was Ultimate Spider-Man because Peter Parker before him was Ultimate Spider-Man, taking place in the Ultimate Universe, and then he died and stayed dead for a while.
Spider-Man.
Until Marvel Comics rebooted all the universes.
Right. Oh, God. Okay.
That's where we get Black Nick Fury from.
Oh, right. Oh, God. We have to reboot the entire universe so that we have some more diversity.
Well, actually, they created a whole universe that had more diversity, and then they rebooted all the universes and made sure that the diversity came along for the ride.
Okay, great, awesome.
Yeah.
On that note, great. Well, hope we didn't give you all a headache. And
did I give you a headache, Lena?
Yes, Aman, of course, every time. Every time. And
you're welcome.
Okay, as always, thank you for listening to Grounded Geeks,
and next week. We'll be on next week again.
You have one job. One job. Unbelievable. Happy New Year, everyone.
Oh, is that that time of year? Yeah, Happy New Year.
Bye.